Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
It is 2016. Welcome to the Media Project, ladies and gentlemen. From Northeast Public Radio, I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York. Sir?
Good day. Happy New Year to one
and
all.
To you also. And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator himself. Alan, you look fabulous today in your WAMC stocking cap. You know,
I do. We give a lot of these out in the fun drive, but I get hat head from them, so I'm not particularly happy about that.
I love those hats. They are just so warm, and believe it or not, Alan, I actually go out and walk in cold weather, and I wear that, and it fixes me right up.
And the great thing about these hats is that no matter how big your head is,
Now, that has nothing to do with your ego. It
just specifically of a physical attribute, not an emotional one. This is fine.
Right.
And it's to hat head. Just don't take it off. Just leave it on.
Sleep in it.
It's fine. You could. It probably would. An old stocking cap.
The lovely Roselle doesn't mind.
Well, let's
she
not get too deeply
that.
Into
yeah,
this.
Yeah, we start with that stuff, and then I'll tell you all my troubles.
All right, so we need to look a little bit back at 2015 and talk about the best and the worst of journalism. We're guided by some thoughts on this. Columbia Journalism Review had a listing. Mario Garcia, who is the leading news designer globally, I think it's fair to say. He used to teach at Syracuse University some 20 years ago and now is independent. Mario Garcia had his highlights and lowlights, and we have some of our own thoughts about this.
What's a news designer, Rexy?
A news designer used to be somebody who would come up with the way that you design your newspaper.
Right.
Because how you design affects how well people are able to read things.
Sure.
Now he has branched into digital as well as for the past 10 years he's been designing digital as well as print. And I met with him before we built our new press here at the Times Union to talk to him about our design.
He was really the guru for...
He was the great guru for much newspaper design. He and Roger Black were the two leading newspaper designers for many years. And we ended up not hiring him to give us design parameters because he's expensive. Other than that, but I take his thoughts into consideration, and his overall philosophy of design really guides us because our design director at the Times Union was a student of his, again, 30 years ago. So anyway, Mario Garcia points out that the highlights of 2016 start with the emergence of the smartphone as being the platform of the future.
That is so interesting because, Rexy, the truth is we all thought for a little while everybody's going to be accessing the news on their big old computers at their desks. Turns out, not at all. Not me. I certainly get up three times a night and read the Times.
Right. What little bit of night you have, actually, right?
Very little night.
Very little night. Small night. Because he's got his cap on, so he needs to check out that. But 64% of American adults now own a smartphone of some kind, and they are getting their news there. And interestingly, even in the younger crowd, the Americans ages 18 to 29, 15% of Americans use the smartphone for their news access. So that's the platform of consequence that's coming that we all need to pay attention to, whether it be audio or visual or words, right?
You know, as I say, I do read the Times a couple of times when I get up in the middle of the night, find out what's changed. And that, of course, has changed the whole business because what you read in the New York Times at 2 o'clock in the morning is not what's going to be on the necessarily what's going to be on the front page of the New York Times when you buy the paper.
Exactly. You know, one of the interesting things, though, is that I have one colleague who wears a smartwatch, the Apple Watch.
Oh, yeah, the Apple Watch.
And we'll be interesting to see this is sometimes referred to as at-a-glance journalism, you know, just getting a headline real quickly.
Yeah.
And because that's about all that little screen can accommodate. Be interesting to see if that really takes hold.
My bet is it will not. I have no interest in having one, although I'm very angry at Apple because on my iPhone, they have put an app on, a watch app. So in other words, you're encouraged basically by having that app there to buy one. But as the old saying goes, no es, Dick Tracy.
No es. ¿Cómo? Is that
como,
Spanish?
¿Cómo es?
Uh-huh, ¿cómo es?
There's no, certain words you don't use on the radio.
Oh,
no es, Dick
no
Tracy.
Es. Yes.
I thought you were saying that there wasn't anything.
And remember
no
that Dick Tracy, of course, started it all because he was the one with the watch. Okay, millennials.
Radio.
Dick Tracy was a television character.
He was a comic strip. But that's, you know, it's interesting because he did, in fact, have this watch.
Yeah.
And it was, what, 75 years ago?
It was
considered.
It was talking to Tess.
Yeah, and it was considered to be the height of science fiction, which is why when you talk about what's next and smartphones are now the primary means, etc., I don't know that the smartwatch is necessarily going to be the next one, but I do think you have to think of something that's already out there and it's going to be continually evolving, which is something like the Google Glasses or something that you don't even have to hold anything. It's going to be with you all of the time and all you have to do is shift your eyes up and around and see it. Mm. Or is it too far-fetched to suggest, as they are already doing in the James Bond movie, that everybody will be implanted with a chip and that somehow or other that will be able to see the news on it? I mean, it sounds crazy.
They can find you.
They can, but you know, does anything sound too crazy today?
No, but here's the thing. Young people today, I was amazed to find this out from my own son, who's now 40 and very young, and that is that the young people don't have watches. They don't use watches.
No, I just learned that recently.
Yeah, right. They don't use watches.
Who needs them, huh?
So they look at their iPhone.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very important and relevant subject for you to bring up, Rex, because I don't see it as really working.
Okay, so what do you think? You know, the watch.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this other, the contrary trend? If you're talking about getting up and checking out the headlines, and we're talking about smartwatch at a glance journalism, what about the long read or the long story? You know, in the radio context, it's of course Serial, which developed this past year as an offshoot of the Ira Glass program that's carried here on WAMC.
Nice, Rex.
Long form journalism and long reads are now coming back in. Sometimes the phrase is referred to as slow journalism, as in like the slow food movement as opposed to the fast food.
Well,
movement.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started this very morning as we're talking. I started reading the Times in one of my nighttime things at 1:30 in the morning. Now I leave the house at 2:30, but at 2:10 I was still reading the longer stories in the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's necessarily that you have to have these pre-digested, you know, stories. I think when they really get into substance, it's good. The only reason I get mad at the Times, by the way, is that they don't change often enough.
Ah.
You know,
let's face it, the three of us are not the kinds of readers who we're talking about for innovation and long-form journalism.
He is euphemistically saying we are old.
Yeah, we're old, and each of us is more than happy to sit down with our hard copy of the New York Times and read those stories that start on page one and are two or three full pages inside. And we're also more than happy to, on occasion, buy a copy of the New Yorker or one of those magazines that has specialized in long-form journalism. But the real question is, are the young people, the millennials and the next one, whatever they're going to be called, are they going to be interested and how are they going to receive that information? And I would say I don't have any clue about the latter, but I can't help but believe that the importance of long-form journalism will never go away because at some point in time you have to learn more than just what's in 140 characters to make a decision in this
world. Well, you know, Ira, that's a very good point. It's all well said. However, there's another way of looking at this. There are sort of two classes that we see as, you know, people who are informed and people who are not informed. And the people who are informed, become segregated to some degree. I don't know how to say this, but in other words, you know, we have the rich and the poor in this country, a lot more rich. The rich are getting richer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we're going to have that intellectually. That's the people who follow the long form And by the way, Ira, inevitably, when the New York Times comes out with a long form or the Washington Post article, I have noticed that somebody now takes the guts of this and tweets it in a few characters.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you're right. And so you get certain people who will follow the link to the story itself, and some people will just get
interesting. Mm-hmm. That's interesting that Donald Trump, is changing his format or whatever he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. One solution to that, or another thing that plays into it, which has very much been a 2015 development, is the rise of data visualization in journalism. Storytelling by great graphics and charts and so on.
Which I see the Times every day.
Absolutely. They're doing a wonderful job of it. Some of the single focus websites are doing it. The Marshall Project, for example, which is run by Bill Keller, the former executive editor of the New York Times. This is a not-for-profit newsroom that is doing great work on criminal justice issues. They hired one of our reporters away from us. Thank you very much. And they're doing deep investigative projects that are told through graphics and charts and data visualization. It's really sophisticated, great stuff.
Right. It's so interesting. You raised another issue that we're very concerned about here at WAMC, which is people come here and they really learn the craft and they're very good at it. And then somebody comes along and offers them more money. This is not good. Now, the point of the matter is there's only a limited amount.
Well, it's not good for you. It's good for them.
No, that's right. Well, it's good for them. And we don't have enough money necessarily to keep everybody here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you really have to play with your pennies and to decide how you can do that.
Well, welcome to the life of the small community newspaper editor who's, we used to tell the story of someone who used to work at the Times Union. I don't know if he was there when Rex was there, Rob Borsellino, the late Rob Borsellino, sadly, but he used to make the comment about the Daily Freeman. He said, people are not sitting around the newsroom at the Washington Post hoping to get a job at the Daily Freeman. I mean, it's small newspapers or small radio stations are going to bring in entry level or slightly above people, and the good ones are going to move on, and why not for them? So it's something you have to get used to, and you're constantly in a training mode.
First of all, Ira, and I hope you don't take this the wrong way.
Oh, I certainly won't, but I consider that to
be very condescending.
The good ones are going to move on.
Well,
nobody's any good is going to stay here at WAMC, is what he's saying. That's not true.
I didn't mean to suggest that.
No, I know you didn't. You're a good man. But the one thing that I think, is fascinating is that there are times when people who are senior decide that they want the bucolic life in a simpler place and will come to you and say, I remember one guy, very, very famous. I'd rather not mention him. I think he's dead now. He came and he asked me to go to lunch with him. He's a very famous public broadcaster. And he sat down with me, and the first question was, so what's the relationship between management and workers at your institution?
Huh.
I said, I'm thinking about coming to work for you. It wasn't that. It wasn't as if we had a choice, somebody of that caliber. And he said, I'm thinking about coming to work for you. Now, what's the relationship between management and labor at your institution?
Whoa.
And I said to myself in the back of my little old head, you ain't coming here.
Right.
Well, but there are people who do stay, and you're looking at one of them. I was at the Daily Freeman 45 years, which was about 43 more than I expected to be because I thought I was going to move on. But as you point out, I liked life and et cetera, et cetera, and I got promoted. But by and large, many of your good journalists are going to move on to larger opportunities, and who can blame them? And when you're running a small company, you bemoan it, but you get used to it.
And yet, we are hearing again and again from people who are moaning, you said bemoaning, but moaning about the newspaper industry, that there are no jobs. So now we're talking about keeping the good ones, who show up and who, by the way, now have a bit of an institutional memory, are well known to their communities, and then ripped from the very guts of the place. So how do you justify it?
There have always been people who, really outstanding people, who decide to stay in a community for one reason or another, who become the backbone of your staff. We have a number of these people in my newsroom who have been with us for many years, who are high quality people. I've always thought that our newsroom has the same proportion of high performers and low performers as the great newsrooms. My experience at Newsday, which when I was there was always considered one of the 10 great papers of America, that was a great newsroom that paid well and had a huge staff of 600 people in the newsroom. And we had, I think, the same proportion of stars there at Newsday as we have now here at the Times Union.
That's interesting. Well, of course, you're in your community. We've all gotten used to the people who who are stars for you, and we hold them up to star status. Just as we here at WAMC, for those people who are listening in another place, have the best radio interviewer around, and that's a guy named Joe Donahue. And Joe Donahue lives up in a little place called Greenwich, New York, and loves his life and wants to be here.
Yep.
And I am just counting the days until somebody comes along, you know, and says, oh, no, we got to have this guy because he's better than anybody else. That's what you worry about.
So we need to look at some of the great and ungreat, some of the top journalism events of 2015 and some of the worst. I think some of the things that we have cited in this program as being shameful are quite obvious. I think the overwhelming coverage after mass shootings and police brutality that is often haphazard or is wall-to-wall on cable television is something that we have cited here as being problematic.
Well, it is the number one story. I don't think there's any question that migration is. However, I listen to the BBC every morning, and every morning, it seems, there's at least a half an hour of their programming that is devoted to this. Now, my problem is, even though I know it's a very serious problem, and if you're somebody who risks death or destruction by getting in a little boat with your kids who could drown and all the rest, I hate to say this to you guys, but I heard this already. I know this story already.
You're talking about the immigrants.
The immigrant story. It is the most important story besides climate change, I think, that we've got going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not terrorism?
Well, terrorism is interesting because we always talk about the fear factor. And terrorism means if I go to New York City and I want to go to Times Square, I'm worried about somebody blowing me up. And terrorism, therefore, rises, you're quite right, higher than even the immigration that is going around somewhere where I'm not at.
Well, in terms of journalism, don't you think that part of the fear factor is the overzealousness of cable television in playing on that fear? Because it drives the ratings. If you can trump up the fear factor, isn't that
absolutely
a journalism flaw?
And it's so far-fetched that you use that trump up in a, you know, because that's the way the guy does it. He puts the fear of everything into what he's doing and say, let's stop those Muslims from coming into this country. And so that is the fear factor. And if you judge according to the fear factor, then I think, global warming should rise to the top, although it's too slow for many people.
Well, that's exactly right. I think this is semi-media, semi-politics, but I think the biggest single mistake are those people who are citing global warming as the number one threat to the country and are being scoffed at by those who say, how can you say that in light of ISIS, etc., that they should be making the qualifier before the words global warming, long-term threat. This is the single biggest long-term threat to our country. But it's hard to make the case when people are being shot down in cafes in Paris or in their workplace in San Bernardino, that violence and that fear is short-term, more important to the American people than is global warming.
I don't know, Ira. I have seen, you're right, of course, but I have seen pictures of you on my Facebook page holding your two beautiful grandchildren. It's so poignant and so wonderful. And that's what the global warming thing is all about when
long-term.
You think about it. Don't we give a damn about our grandchildren and about our children?
But you can't, as a journalist, you can't force the news.
Yeah,
you can't
right.
force people to read, and especially when you have a presidential campaign underway in which one political party is determined, quite frankly, to overlook the overwhelming science and to instead play upon people's preference to avoid the difficult issues.
I know. You know, Arlo Guthrie does a song, and he says there are two ways to learn the song. You can learn it the new fashioned way that they teach music, or you can learn it the old boring way. He says you can learn it the old boring way. Now, you know, the old boring way is responsible journalism.
Ah,
that's what's so interesting. I read your paper and I love it. But, you know, you're going to talk about the mayor and the city council, perhaps on the front page, when the New York POST, I look for news on my smartphone from the POST and I can't find any.
Right.
There's none there.
Right. You won't find the news. Well, and increasingly, actually, that's one of the difficulties that you're going to see more of in times to come, because what is being pushed out is going to be, that is, what is being pushed to the consumers is going to be what generates traffic, which equals advertising revenue, and the journalism is going to be behind the paywall. Without, and a lot of people are not going to be willing to pay for it, because you can't produce journalism without revenue, and you can't get enough revenue from advertising dollars alone, because there's now unlimited inventory. There's so much advertising opportunities out there in so many places. So you have to create a paywall, and people don't want to pay for anything yet. Right. They've gotten this sense that...
Well, I pay for the Times, and I think I pay for the TU.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, I think that I hope that there will come a time in perhaps 10 or 20 years when the principals at the major cable news networks and some of the broadcasting network people have an opportunity to sit around and have some drinks, and that they will admit, when they look back at this campaign and the Republican side, that they have committed some of the worst journalism in the history of the...
And they know it. Ira, they know it now.
Well, I tell you, they're doing the country a disservice. The way that they have allowed Trump to wrestle the coverage and to dictate the airtime and where the interviews are going to take place and how the interviews are going to take place. And then is it sadomasochism when you do something like enable Trump to go on at a stump speech and they air it live, and then CNN will do it, and then he spends 10 minutes telling people how bad CNN is, and they just let it roll on? I mean, I'm all for self-criticism, but on and on and on. And why are they doing it? Seemingly only for the ratings. And obviously, as Rex pointed out, you need the eyeballs and the revenue, etc. But at some point in time in journalism, you are supposed to make decisions absent the pecuniary interests.
Who told you that?
That's what I was brought up.
That's right. That's how you were brought up. That's how I was brought up. Yeah. That's how Rex was brought up. Nevertheless, in the end, the Daily News and the New York Post know that the way you drive revenue is you put almost every single day an almost full-page, semi-nude picture of a woman on, and it seems to work.
But I hate to say it, but the impact now, the impact now in this country of the drumbeat on cable news is more significant, more influential, by and large, than what's on the front page of a New York City Daily tabloid. I just cringe at it. I understand. I mean, I'll watch sometimes Trump, and I have to admit I'm entertained. At the same time, I want to throw a shoe at the TV. But it's particularly infuriating to me that they have given this guy carte blanche. It has played a role in the election. It has to have played a role.
So you're thinking that it's not that rather than reflecting the reality of voters' desires for Donald Trump, it is partly because he has been given so much airtime that he has risen in the polls.
I think that at the outset, that is what propelled him to where he is now. And now they're saying he's the leader of the polls. You've got to cover him.
I think it's chicken and egg, to be honest with you. I think it's both.
Perhaps we underestimated the power of a reality TV star running for president, and the spectacle of his candidacy just sucked the media attention away from the other candidates, and the result is now he really does have, I mean, and I've even seen statements that he's being underestimated in the polls, so.
Well, you guys are very good, as good editors, of looking at a story and saying, this either has legs or it doesn't. That's what they pay you for, and you know it. So let's stop beating ourselves up and understand that if you can't produce those numbers and if you can't do it, that somebody's gonna fire you.
But the New York Times or the Albany Times Union can run a story on Trump every day of the week and probably should. He's a major figure in this primary, but it will be one story. Maybe it'll be on the front page. More likely, it'll be on page 6 or 8, and you move on to the many other stories. On cable news, because of the nature of that medium, it's on wall to wall.
You should be teaching journalism, Ira.
How about that?
Is there any money in it?
Finally, we need to just make note of this. 69 journalists died on the job in 2015.
It's a lot.
That includes 28 of them killed by militant Islamists, including Al-Qaeda and ISIS. 8 journalists during the attack on Charlie Hebdo in Paris, and 13 journalists killed in Syria. So we pay tribute to those who, in the effort to bring the truth to people around the world, lost their lives.
We do.
All right. Amen. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith in the Media Project this week. We thank you and hope you'll join us again.
Ira, I have to say, we haven't seen you that much. You've been out with the grandchildren and everything, and we hope that you'll rearrange your priorities.
Happy New Year,
Happy New Year, everybody.
Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.